Welcome back to this week's episode of Energy in Action. I'm your host, Stephanie, and thank you for joining us. Here on Energy in Action, we talk all things Mito, and we speak with people who are in the know about Mito. Today, we are being joined by the founder of Rare New England and current volunteer president, Julie Gertzi. Rare New England helps to coordinate resources for families with rare and complex disorders, and they serve the entire New England area. Hi, Julie. Welcome to our podcast. I'm really excited to have our conversation today about Rare New England and how you started everything. And we'll jump right in then to your big conference that's coming up at the end of the month. So why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself to our listeners?
My name is Julie Gertzi. I am a registered nurse. I used to work acute care in the hospital. About 5.5 years ago, I founded, along with a few other medical providers, Rare New England. That is a nonprofit based out of Massachusetts, and we are serving the rare disease community in New England.
So when you say New England, like the Boston, New Hampshire, like all the way up and down the Eastern coast, or do you guys have actual borders of who you serve?
All the six New England states is our biggest focus because we are living in this area. We have more connections with the patients and families, with the physicians, with the medical institutions that we have been working with for quite some time. And again, this is not that we don't help others, especially if they reach out to us from across the country. It's just that we know the New England area a little bit better. So if someone does reach out to us, we're happy to help with them with, you know, transferring some of the information to states where they belong in.
Excellent. I know I go to your website all the time when I'm trying to find resources for families up in New England, and I'm quite jealous every time I have a family from that area because I'm like, oh, you guys are the mecca of rare disease out there. There's so many great providers and so many resources available for people that it's so much easier than when we have families in Colorado or Nebraska where it's just like a desert of support. So I'm so thankful you guys are there because you help make my job a lot easier.
I understand. We have heard from others across the country, and I know how challenging it is for a lot of these patients and families who don't have the appropriate care in the states that they live in.
Oh, definitely. So do you have a breakout of like the most popular of the rare diseases, if that's a way to phrase it, that you serve, or is it just really a popcorn where it's just a variety of everything?
Yeah, huge variety, to be honest with you. I can't think of any biggest group. You know, maybe there'll be a biggest group at one time, but then that changes over time. So we've had people with all different rare diseases reach out to us. And we also collaborate, of course, with organizations. So, you know, a lot of these organizations bring a huge variety of rare diseases as well.
Right.
What we found and why we decided to go into rare New England rather than staying with one disease is over time, we learned that the challenges out there are the same no matter what disease that you have. Things like, you know, in schools and having IEPs and 504 plans followed, that's the same no matter what disease. Trying to find accessible care, trying to find treatments, trying to find physicians who are knowledgeable or at least willing to work with your rare disease. That's pretty much across the board. So that's something that we learned, and that's why we try to support all rare diseases of any kind.
Wow, I love that approach because you're right. And I always say to people, if we keep fracturing off into little tiny subgroups of each rare disease, we're just diluting all of our resources. So we have such a stronger voice if we stay together and we're better together and helping each other find school resources. Just all the things that you just named off, it affects all of us in a different but same way.
Better together. That's awesome.
Better together. Yep. So you guys have your big annual conference coming up at the end of October. If I'm remembering right, it's October 23rd.
That's correct.
All right. So what is your big annual conference and what could people who want to register late, who you said we can register late and it's free for patients and caregivers. So definitely go over there and register and jump on in. I know I've always had great information at your conferences. So who's going to be presenting and what are the topics this year?
First of all, you know, backing up just a little bit, we do hold an annual conference each year and we go to a different New England state each year. That was a goal up until the pandemic, anyway, where we needed to go virtual. The idea is there are a lot of patients and caregivers who really can't travel the way that they, you know, that some of the people who don't have diseases could do. So we do try to offer something in a different state each year. We have hosted our conferences in Maine and Vermont, and we were about to go into Connecticut when the pandemic started. So we are hoping to do Connecticut in person next year. Actually, that is the plan. We've got the hotel down. Fingers crossed that works. But meanwhile, we have been doing the virtual. We did this for last year. We decided it would be a good idea to keep that with this year as well. In our conference, there's really nothing scientific. It's information that is good for everyone. We also try to bring in information that is across the board for rare diseases. So you may not find something that is specific for your disease, but the information that comes out of the talk pertains to everyone. So with that said, the theme for our conference this year is resilience. We think that's a really good one. First of all, the rare disease community in itself is so resilient. And then, you know, there's been a lot of challenges over the past year and a half with the pandemic. And still people are being, you know, just as resilient. So we do have someone from Patient Advocacy Foundation. They're an awesome nonprofit organization that does help with patients who need the extra care. Like maybe they are trying to apply for a disability. They are an organization that can help them with this sort of thing. So they are going to be coming and talking, guiding patients to better outcomes. They're a great resource to be learning from. We do have an attorney who's going to be coming and talking about accessibility and protections under state and federal law. We have a healthcare professionals panel and a group of excellent speakers. Brittany Holmes, who is a nurse practitioner, Department of Genetics. We have Dr. Amy Kritzner, who's coming from Children's Hospital. We have Mary Frances Garber, who is a certified genetic counselor, working in private practice. And we have Dr. Mark Corson, who is part of Rand of England, who is going to be moderating that panel so that we can hear more about what the challenges have been and if they have been overcome and how they have been overcome and in ideas from people who, you know, medical professionals who have been working through the pandemic. We do have another panel so that we can hear from adult caregivers, from patients, from patient organizations, and we have another, another person from Rand of England who is going to be moderating that, so that they also are going to be able to give us a perspective of the challenges that they have faced or they have seen with some of their membership. One thing about Rand of England, we realize that there are a ton of resources out there. Maybe not enough for everyone, but there are many, many resources out there. But we find that most people don't know about them. But, you know, the physicians, the medical teams, the social workers, even the patients and the families don't know about all the resources that are available for these patients and families. So we do this every year, bringing in a panel, and we have one from four different organizations. One Rare is going to be sharing about their fairly new nonprofit that has to do with supporting young adults with disabilities. We have the Coalition Against Pediatric Pain, who will be coming in and talking about their organization and their members who, of course, are dealing with chronic pain. We have Angel Flight New England, who will be coming in and sharing about the medical flights. And Uplifting Athletes will also be coming to share about what they do and how they can be a resource for patients and families. We also have a piece on diversity, and we have someone from the RDLA, the Rare Disease Legislative Activists, coming and talking about their nonprofit. A couple of other things in there as well, but I mean, it is a really fantastic lineup. And again, all of this information is great for people across the board.
Oh, definitely. It sounds like an action-packed day. I'm excited to get registered and sign up. I have a young adult, and those transition services and that moving piece from pediatric care to adult care is an absolute minefield. And I love that you actually have some resources there that might be helpful for us to navigate that a little bit better, because we've had just a nightmare of a year, having COVID as well, getting all new adult providers lined up. It's not for the faint of heart, that's for sure.
No, it's not. And I hear that very often. That's a very common challenge for the young ones to become the adults and be able to find the appropriate care.
Yeah. And actually the pediatric pain, I think that'll be also a great resource for people to plug into. Again, that's definitely an under-researched area where I don't think we really estimate the level of pain our kids are in, and we don't have adequate ways of treating the pain. And we all know about the pain management programs that have been used in the past that really haven't been effective from a sociological standpoint. So I think that's a great resource that you're bringing in, because so many of our kids and patients have rare disease.
No, you're right there. So many of them deal with the chronic pain. It's a really tough area for these patients and families, and especially with what's going on out there, you know, and the belief. It's not something that you can measure by looking at someone. And we know the problems that do happen sometimes with patients and physicians not really understanding how much pain they're in. But I will tell you that the people who run TCAP is really how it's said for short. They are very passionate for caring for their members.
Well, good. I'm really excited to plug in for that one for sure. So where do you see Rare New England going moving forward? Do you guys have a strategic plan that you're working on? I would say you guys should be very happy with the success that you have where you are, and the amount of information you bring out to the community is amazing.
Yeah, I'll tell you. I mean, we had no idea that the organization was going to take off the way that it has. When we first got into this, it was really that I was doing a support group that was not a nonprofit. And of course, people were coming from two or three states away to come to meetings through this support group. And I wanted to be able to feed them. And so I was going around and looking for donations to be able to feed them lunch. And of course, you can imagine how difficult that is when you don't have a tax ID. So it was with that, you know, that's what we decided to go and form the nonprofit. But we had no idea the potential that we were going to bring to the New England area through our other programs that we've also brought into the mix, which not only includes doing, you know, the support for patients and caregivers, you know, and through the conference, and we do have a virtual support group, but also to be able to educate physicians and other medical providers about rare diseases as well. So to answer your question a little better, I guess what we are doing is we're still growing capacity, and we are hoping to be able to expand the programs that we have and make them more efficient for bottom line, for patients and families to have more access to better care or information, education, and the support that they need.
Now, have you guys already had your career fair for the fall? I know you do like two a year, right? Spring and fall?
Yeah, and it changes depending on what's happening that year, because we had just started that a couple of years ago. And actually, tomorrow night is our first fall career fair. We have our first one, and then we do have another one in November and another one in December. And then there will be another one in January in 2022. So, that's great because we are reaching the medical students to share with them what's going on, in the genetic world with hopes that they're going to get an interest in going into genetics as they go through medical school. So we're excited about this program that's been going on for a couple of years. And of course, we were able to bring that virtual as well. Because when we started, that was something that we brought in person. But it's worked out well. Not only has it worked out well, but when we were doing that in person, we really could only reach the medical students who were near the facility. So say we did do it in Boston, and we did get students coming from some of the Boston medical schools, but now we're able to reach that across the country. So actually for tomorrow's, we have the medical students from like University of Kansas and Chicago and, you know, other medical schools across the country. So that's been fantastic.
That is a great outreach. I love that. Does Dr. Corson work at the career fair and give sort of an overall of the wonderful world of being in genetics and bio? I don't even know how to say all the fancy words he does. Like,
I know he does know all the fancy words. It corrects me up with some of these names. Let's face it, some of these diseases, oh my gosh, you know, they have these big long names that who could pronounce them?
Exactly.
But yes, I mean, he's been phenomenal in the organization from the beginning and bringing, of course, he's the one who brought in the Career Fairs, directs the Career Fairs, and also directs the Rare Disease Day speaker series that we do from February to early March. And that's when we go into medical schools and genetic counseling schools and medical facilities around New England and share about rare diseases where it could be in grand rounds, pediatric rounds, genetic rounds, lunch rounds, all these different opportunities, you know, throughout the hospital. So this has been fantastic.
Yeah, I love that program. And I think it's a way to keep people, get their interest piqued or regenerate something that they learned back in medical school, just to kind of bring it back to top of mind. And I think in today's world now, with all of the technology that's moving through the medical industry, genetics is just like at the tip of the iceberg. I think the up and coming medical students are really going to grasp onto it because it's more in their wheelhouse than ever before.
Yeah. And as technology, you know, expands, I mean, it's getting better and better every day. And disease is going to be, diagnosed faster. And we need to be able to keep up with that. As it is, it's really hard for patients. You know, there's so many patients walking around, as you know, that still have symptoms and have not been diagnosed yet because doctors just don't understand what's going on with them. Even when they are diagnosed, you know, the wait to get into a specialist is excruciating for them. So, yeah, we need to do better.
It took us close to 14 years to get my son's correct diagnosis, and then roughly another 7 years for people to finally to be able to interpret what his whole genome study really revealed and how things are impacting him so that we could make better choices just on medications and treatments. I mean, his disease doesn't have a treatment, but there are supportive therapies out there that we could be utilizing better. But it shouldn't take us 21 years to try to figure out how somebody's body is broken.
I have that similar story because I was diagnosed with a hearing loss when I was 7. I don't want to tell you how old I am right now, but let me just say that it's been decades, you know, and it wasn't until about 8 years ago when I was finally diagnosed. 13 years ago, there was a suspicion, and it was funny because there was a neuro-ophthalmologist, because I was having eyesight issues, and neuro-ophthalmologist is the first doctor out of all the many doctors that I have seen over the years because of so many different body system problems, who finally looked at the history and said, I wonder if this might be caused by one disease. And that's where I started, you know, getting more information and going into the hunt for, you know, what was going on with me. But yeah, I mean, and this is a lot of the problem too, I think. And it's great that we have the specialties.
Yes.
I mean, if we're going to have open heart surgery, certainly we want somebody who specializes in that procedure. But the problem is when they're, you know, people are working in just one area, they stick with that one area and they just shut everything else out. So they're not looking at the whole patient and, you know, everything that's going on with that patient to be able to see if maybe it's all connected.
Right. That's the problem, is we need to have the different disciplines come to the table together and share notes and visit experiences and be able to treat the whole patient, not just that little portion of, like you said, of the body that they specialize in. Because sometimes, well, most of the time, there's an overlap. I mean, who would have thought a neuro-ophthalmologist, right? I mean, that's just such a highly specialized field that most people don't even realize is something that's out there. And I suppose you went to that appointment not thinking you were going to come out with somebody saying that to you.
No, I really didn't, because at the time I was, you know, the eyesight issues that had changed a lot. So I'm diagnosed with optic neuropathy, and that took a couple of years to even get that diagnosis. But with the eyesight issues, here I was dealing with, oh my gosh, I could be going blind, because they couldn't tell me I wasn't. Two, you have this rare disease that like people die from, or it can affect all these body organs. And yeah, it was a trying time, I'll tell you.
I made up a name for him. I'm sure I'm not the only one who says it, but I call him the gobsmacked appointments. Like, we go in thinking, you know, normal, this will be just an easy breezy appointment. And then we just get gobsmacked with information. And it's like, I always say, when will I learn to not think, oh, this will be an easy 20-minute deal and we'll come out unscathed? And that just never happens. It's like every time you go in, it's just like an onslaught of more, oh no, I get that. When you least expect it, that's what I always say. When you least expect it, rare disease is going to throw in a red flag on some appointment.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. It's an experience.
It is an experience. Not like a carnival ride, though, is it? That's the other thing. I call it the crazy fun time carnival with my son and all of our appointments. It's like, oh, man, here we go. So.
Well, it's good to keep a sense of humor. Definitely.
Well, when you're dealing with a teen and now a young adult, you have to find a way to communicate with them in a way that they don't become frightened or negative, or, you know, because it can be pretty all consuming sometimes. And so you need to try to find a way to have perspective and balance. I think that's how I've been doing it.
I agree. Sometimes it's easier than others. That's all. But it is good to keep a balance. Definitely.
Definitely. Well, Julie, thank you so much for coming on our podcast and telling everyone about what's coming up with Rare New England. I, for one, have been one of your biggest fans from, I think, day one. So keep up the good work out there. And I will be registering for the conference. And I can't wait to hear everybody. You've got my interest piqued.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. And just as a reminder for, like, patients and caregivers are free this year, which is fantastic. So anybody who wants to sign up, wants to register. The recordings will also be available for like a month on the platform. So okay. If for some reason they, you know, somebody wants to sign up and see some special talks, but they just can't on that day, they'll still be able to, as long as they're registered, go back and take a look at them.
Oh, I love that they'll have access to the recordings. And I know for myself, sometimes I need to hear things a couple of times. So I always love to go back and double check what I scribed as my notes to what I heard. So that's a great resource to have. Thank you.
Yeah, that's awesome. And of course, it's also open to physicians. We do have physicians and genetic counselors and, you know, people from industry and such all signed up as well. So it is, the information is appropriate for all.
Yeah, it definitely is. It's a great lineup this year. So thankfully COVID works out. I mean, this is one of the silver linings of COVID. We get to attend more things at a lesser expense. So I do appreciate that.
Very true.
But I would love to come to Connecticut. So you'll probably see me in person next year, God willing, we're through the pandemic. So.
Well, that would be awesome.
Wouldn't that be fun?
Yeah. I mean, I know we've done email here, you know, here and there for this time. And then we saw each other in chat. In the other, the Patients Rising piece.
Right.
And now I finally get to see what you look like on the recording. So that'll be the next step in person. Yes, definitely.
Yeah. Look forward it'll to be it. Fun. All right. Well, thanks again. I really appreciated your time today.
Yes. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you, everyone, for tuning into this week's episode of Energy in Action. I'm sure you found all the information from Julie very interesting. I think it's great that we have so many resources available to draw on when we're trying to support one another. Remember to give us a 5-star rating on your listening app. That helps to boost us up the charts so others can find us. To learn more about Rare New England, go to rarenewengland.org. To see their entire agenda for this year's annual conference, just go to their program tab and then you'll find annual conference. Be sure to join us next time for more All Things Mito. This is your host, Stephanie, Rare Mom Extraordinaire.